Hello, it's Lee Darrant here with another episode of Rodcast, where, as you know by now, we dive into people's Salesforce careers to find you little nuggets of inspiration that might help you in your Salesforce career. I'm pleased to say that joining me today is Dave Atkins, who I've known for a long, long time. Hi, Dave. How you doing, mate?
Morning, Lee. Are you well?
Good, good, good. Thank you so much for agreeing to share your Salesforce career with us. I mean, or your career before Salesforce as well. And then obviously any little tips you've got along the way will be brilliant. I was thinking perhaps you can, I know you and I go back a long way, so perhaps you can give us a high level intro about you and then before we sort of dive into where it all began and then bring us up to date. So yeah, a little intro would be great.
Sure, yeah, okay, where it all began. I came through a software background, usual sort of development and design way back in the day. I was introduced back in the mid 90s to something called CRM. Now, I'd never heard of it. Nobody else appeared to have heard of it. And it was it was something entirely new, and it took some time for that to come to fruition. It was quite weird really, because the first real introduction to Salesforce I had, I was working for a software company and they wanted to try out CRM. And I did a bit of research and came across this thing called Salesforce, which was in its very, very early stages then.
Well, yeah, if you're talking mid-90s, they didn't start till 99, I don't think, did they?
It was 99, yeah, it was 99 they started. I think this by then was probably about 2000, 2001,
something like that.
The strange thing was that one of my colleagues in my present company said the same thing, and he described it as when Salesforce was nothing more than a glorified address book, which way back. We adopted that, and obviously in those days you didn't have the infrastructure around it that you have today, so everything we did ourselves. We found that it was very customizable and whatever. And it worked well. It worked well as a sales tool, something that we could track customers on, track their purchases and their prospects. But it was a very, very simple system then. I just moved on through.
I'm going to name some names then. Was that pre-Lagan? Because you were at
Lagan. Yes. Well, pre-Lagan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
This was a company called Gavs, which I think you may remember.
I remember Gavs, yeah. Consultancy.
That's right. I was working with them. And really, it was an internal system. We needed to use something to track sales. And that's how I got my first taste of CRM and of Salesforce.
It fell onto you, did it, to be that person to get it to work?
Yeah, I was literally chief cook and bottle washer. Everything I had to do. Had no concept of going outside to anything like an SI or, you know, things like that. We did it ourselves. And obviously coming from a software background, it was interesting for me to do that, and interesting for me to become involved in the business side of it. So, you know, how we use CRM.
And as I said before to you, I'm going to go off on tangents here, but I looked at your profile, even though I've known you for a long time, and I kind of know your profile so well, because obviously we've worked together for so many years in terms of me either recruiting for you or finding your job. So I know your profile. But more often than not, you refer to yourself as a project manager.
Yeah, yeah.
You said chief cook and bottle washer. And that leads to my first sort of question that is a bit off topic in terms of your career anyway. if you're called a project manager, but you're doing what you did with Salesforce, there's so many different things you can call yourself, because obviously to do what you've done just to build that from nothing for Gavs, it's so much more than project management, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it was a lot more. And that continued for probably 5-6 years of with various CRM packages. I spent a lot of time with something called Avaya Interaction Center. And again, the original position that they asked me to do was a technical position. And then I ended up managing the entire project. And that was my introduction to real project management, which I, you know, thought, well, I quite enjoy doing this. And that's when I'd finished that project, I then decided that I'd try and angle my career more at project management than the technical side. And that's really the sort of widening of the stream there. One of the problems as a technical project manager is that companies tend to use you in when things go slightly adrift, shall we say, or they don't have the expertise, you suddenly end up being a techie again. You know, or certainly in those days, it probably doesn't happen quite so much these days, although, you know, you still dabble.
The reason I bring that up is because I think if you've had a vast career like you have, so, and you're you know, if looking around or what have you, your CV can sometimes come across as, I don't know what this person is. They look like they've done a bit of everything. And I think hiring managers and recruiters can get a bit confused as to what you are. So I'm wondering whether there's a tip there about writing a CV for the job you kind of
want,
rather than a whole big list of everything you've ever done. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely right. In fact, that is a trap that I've fallen into a few times when I've gone for a certainly a few years back anyway, gone for a position as project manager or even program manager. They've looked at my CV and said, oh, you're a techie.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, no, I'm not. That's my background. Yeah. But, you know, I'm project manager. You know, I've gone through all the print stuff, the agile stuff, and you know, worked my way through that. But that is you're dead right. That's a top tip. If you're going to go for a position, make sure your CV reflects that position. So, you know, don't let it waffle on about I've done this and done that in other sectors. Make sure it's to the point. If you're going to be a project manager, you're a project manager.
Yeah. And obviously without not saying you're saying this, but without, you know, fabrication, you just, maybe it's just taken away all the noise that's not relevant to that particular role, or because we do get that a lot actually in the Salesforce space, where someone is, let's say they're an admin and they've done some development and they want to be a developer, but the CV smacks of I'm an admin, then line managers, which I'm sure you've been in that situation yourself, you're not reading CVs from top to bottom, you're skimming, you're too busy, and it's very quick to just go, well, that person's an admin, not a developer. That person in your case is a techie, not a project manager. So that's it. That is first really good tip. Thank you very much. So I remember then that you worked for a company called Lagan that were a CRM company, but I'm guessing not cloud, obviously, like Salesforce. Am I right? Was that what Lagan?
That's
was?
Exactly right. Yeah. Lagan were a Northern Ireland based CRM company that dealt exclusively in the public sector. So it was an interesting period of my life, actually, because I did a lot of travel all over the world, working with different governments and different government departments, countries, where, you know, we were putting in quite a sophisticated CRM system. You know, throughout the UK, we put it into just about every local authority you can name, but also places like San Francisco, And the most interesting of all for me was New Orleans, just after Katrina.
Oh, right.
We put it in there. That was an experience. Probably the details of which are for another day, but it was.
I didn't know that. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? So you're getting to see the inner workings of these government systems all over the world. You must have had a high level of security clearance for that.
Yeah. I did, and that came into fruition later on as well, when I dealt with the UK security side of things as well. So it's a way. It's strange. You never set out to actually do this and say, right, this is my plan, this is my career path and whatever. It's just how things drop. But you've got to be ready to take those opportunities, and equally ready to realize your own requirements and maybe even your own limitations. So sometimes you've just got to say no. That's not what I do, that's not what I want to do, that's not what I want to get involved in. But equally, you say, well, yep, when something comes across and you think that sounds interesting, then you go for it. You go for it 100%.
That's actually really good advice, especially in this Salesforce world that we are living in. Probably even more so. Salesforce has always been an industry where there have been more opportunities than there have been good, well, not good, but experienced people. I think it's been exacerbated by COVID and Brexit more recently. It just seems like if you are a Salesforce person, you have any kind of experience, there are so many opportunities out there that it's probably difficult to sort of sit still and not have your head turned every 5 minutes by the likes of me. So probably good advice to sort of know what you want and try and tune out the rest of the noise. So that would be another little nugget for people. So like a lot of people that I speak to that have certainly had a long career, two things you said that I think resonate. You look back on the career and go, blimey, it looked like it was all a plan, but of course, not necessarily. And also, you got into Salesforce kind of, I won't say by accident, but you didn't plan to get into Salesforce. It just happened to be a system that the company you were working for wanted to implement.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. John Lennon said that, life is what happens when you're busy making plans, and that's exactly how it's turned out.
So what's on that note then, what where did you see your, what did you think your career was going to look like before Salesforce came along and you then went down that road?
I saw my career really being in engineering sectors, project managing projects within an engineering sector, which it's worked out totally different. Very rarely am I involved in engineering sectors, although strangely enough the project that I'm managing at the moment, quite a large Salesforce project, is with a large engineering company. It's probably the first time in 10-15 years.
I suppose that's the good thing about Salesforce now anyway, isn't it? Is that unlike in your Lagan days when it was all government, now it can be anything. You could be working on a government, engineering one day, and I don't know, a bank the next, and all these different.
Absolutely. In fact, as you say, engineering, banking, gaming systems, and all sorts of areas. Salesforce is such a diverse tool now that there's so many angles to it. It's very difficult to keep up with everything. As much as you can do the trailhead, yeah, and as much as you can keep up with what you think you've got, the next project, certainly as I'm working for a very large SI now, they'll drop something else into you, and you think, I've not done this before. But Salesforce is Salesforce, and the amount of support now you get from Salesforce compared to 10 years ago is incredible. So yeah, it's a good time.
when you started then with this project at Gavs, there was no trailhead, was there?
I don't know what there was.
I think you had to just Google stuff and go on. I seem to remember iTunes University used to do like some little courses you could watch, but I guess you just had to wing it, did you?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You would, you'd spend, you know, sort of quite some time doing the simplest of things, because at the start of it, you had absolutely no idea how it was going to work. And that's where obviously my software background came in handy for me. But and even these days, you know, as a project manager, pure project manager, I don't think they let me near anything technical these days. But
you got where you wanted to be then, which is
yeah. So the overall goal has been fulfilled, and you know, I've got to say, I'm really glad it's a decision I made. I'm really glad that I'm in the Salesforce ecosystem somewhere, because it is so diverse.
So the next natural question is kind of, when did you know that I'm going to do this as this is the road I want to go down? Was it at Gavs, or did it come a bit later?
Oh, it came a bit later. Again, I was with I'd gone from permanent jobs to contracting.
We'll come back to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the contract I had was with a company called Arkiva, who are the people that supply the communications for the smart metering.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I got it was simply because in some stage of my CV, it mentioned Salesforce. And I think it was the beginning of where Salesforce people were few and far between.
Yeah.
But I did also have quite a lot of project management experience, and that's really what they were after. So at that stage, I'd really, if you like, got my teeth into Salesforce. I realized then that it was a very, very useful tool. And then talking to various people within Salesforce and users and also government bodies, it became obvious that it really was going to be the way ahead. So I did make a conscious decision then that everything I did would be in future, you know, revolving around Salesforce.
Yeah, lovely. And then you mentioned you went from permanent to contract. Was that a conscious decision, or did it just happen that way?
No. Like a lot of people, I got made redundant. And I made the decision that I really didn't want a permanent position again. And contracts came up. That was the first one that looked viable for me. And also the interest level.
Yeah.
I was at a stage really in my career where I didn't really, you know, need to take the first thing just to, you know, sort of put food on the table. And so I was, you know, able to choose, and I've got to say, it was a great choice. Set me on the way, to serious Salesforce project management,
yeah,
and serious involvement.
What's it like? What, you know, for someone listening that perhaps is permanent in a permanent job and think about going contracting, and even the other way around, what are the sort of differences and how did you find going from one to the other? And from what I understand now, I mean, I'm fast forwarding a bit, but you're back to permanent now.
Yeah.
But that's you were many years as a contractor, I know.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think the difference is, and the pluses and the minuses of both, I suppose?
Well, the pluses of contracting, I think, are that you can have probably a better work-life balance, because you can, if you're prudent, you know, sort of make enough money to be able to maybe take 2 or 3 months off and then look for a contract. It's probably easier now, certainly in the Salesforce world, than it was back then. But that's a definite plus. You do have the downside is often you are not treated the same as a permanent employee, so you don't get the benefits. You know, obviously, you yeah. don't get holidays, paid holidays. You don't get any kind of sickness. And some companies don't include you in their social side. Mm-hmm. Although I've been very lucky, there's only one that's ever done that. But some will take you on as though you're a full-time employee and treat you exactly the same.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't think of that.
Because the thing about it in the end is how much do you value job security? Because when there's a downturn, the first people to go are the contractors.
Contractors, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But then, you know, is any job secure? You mentioned earlier on you're made redundant, which is what got you into it. So I think the word permanent should be changed to something else. It's never permanent, especially in the Salesforce world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's always interesting to hear how, the difference, and then obviously you switch back. But I'll fast forward too much to the latest perm role. Mm-hmm. So obviously we got to a point there where you thought, right, that's it. I'm doing Salesforce. I'm a contractor now. I'm interested because I know that you've been on both sides of the fence in terms of obviously being interviewed for a Salesforce job, but also I know from my experience that you've interviewed people to work for you on projects as well. So any kind of any sort of stories of maybe weird experiences on either side of the fence, no names obviously, tips for people, because again a lot of people that listen to this podcast are probably thinking of at some point moving jobs, and it's nice to get different points of view on tips and
I mean one of the things that I always look for is not just the Salesforce side of a CV, but also their general side. The reason why I do that is quite often you do get the odd person that you get that they've had very little Salesforce experience, but you get that feeling about through their CV that they could easily fit in. And with all the learning material that are provided by Salesforce and other companies, it's not that difficult to actually get the overall gist of everything within Salesforce. So I like to make sure that there's a varied CV. Don't overdo it. Don't go over the top about Salesforce, especially if it's, should we say, a slight exaggeration. That's one of the things that you can certainly, I've come to notice when I go through CVs, there's too much emphasis, and you think, well, you couldn't possibly have done that in that period of time. But CVs really have to reflect you, not just your work experience, but they have to reflect you as a person, because you can be the best PM, the best technical architect, the best BA in the world, but if you don't come across as being able to fit into that kind of environment that you know you're being recruited into, then it's not good for the company, and it's certainly not good for you. So make sure your CV is really rounded in that sense.
I wonder if that is because obviously with yourself and a lot of people I speak to on this podcast that fell into Salesforce, you've probably got that rounded view. Whereas some people these days, it's all about how many certifications have I got, how many trailhead badges have I got, you know, and it's all so Salesforce because they want to get into it. Unlike a lot of people like yourself who fell into it, these people are targeting. So it's good advice, I think, though, because I've heard that a few times where the one thing that you can learn probably is the Salesforce stuff, but you can't learn the personality, the other experiences. They're just things that have happened to you. So we're trying to spread that message, I think. And from a point of view of you being interviewed yourself, any strange experiences? And I know I've sprung this one on you, so don't worry if you can't think of any.
Strange experience.
I know you've had a few, and I hope you don't mind me saying this. We had a recent podcast with a fellow who was made redundant, Richard Pay. He was probably the last podcast we did, actually. Made redundant in his 50s, decided Salesforce was for him, tried to get into the Salesforce world, and he found it quite challenging because people were disregarding him because of his age, and almost forgetting that there's all this experience in some really, really good industries that Salesforce could benefit from. And in the end, he's got a really good job, so that's great. Did you find that a little bit in your, towards the
rarely.
The end of your career, but the middle end of your career? Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah, very rarely. I've been lucky. I mean, obviously, you've only looked at my CV to see I've been around a bit. So I'm obviously not 25 years of age. But I've been very lucky. I think maybe the fact that my CV is tailored and slightly rounded, to show not only experience, but who I am and what I am. Then I think there's only probably twice I could actually say, yeah, the reason why I didn't get that is because of my age.
Yeah.
So to anybody listening to this that, is shall we say, slightly more mature, provided you look at your CV and think, right, would I employ this person? Not the technical side, not the project management side, but would I employ this person? Would he fit into a team? Would he be able to join in with people that sometimes, I'll be honest, young enough to be my sons or daughters?
Yeah.
Then, I think most people are pretty fair. You're obviously going to get some that are biased, but that's it.
I think I've had this with yourself and maybe some other people where the CV gets disregarded because there's no certifications on there. And this is kind of going back to the point from earlier, but you go, there's all this experience and you're saying no because there's no admin Salesforce certification on there.
Yeah.
When the guy's a really experienced project manager, doesn't make any sense to me. What's your thoughts on that?
I suspect that has happened to me. I've never had any out and out proof. But my view is that the experience that I have across that, it should be enough for any worthy employer to be able to say, well, yeah, he's actually done it. He's not sat in the class and learned it from a book, or learned it online or whatever. I go back to the days where certification for certain things in back in the days when Microsoft certification was supposed to be the be all and end all, and I was in a managerial position then, and people would turn up and the only thing they'd ever done is gone through all these certifications. When you put them in front of a system, they didn't have a clue, because they'd never actually done it. All they'd done is learn it from a course and spent a lot of money on it. So maybe I'm a little bit biased the other way. I would never, ever say to anybody, don't do certifications.
Yeah.
But when I'm looking through CVs, I glance at that. And, sometimes you'll see multiple certification, and my reaction is always, wow, but that isn't going to sway me in one way or the other. It's about the person, about their experience, about the times they've spent within a company,
and
things like that, so
you see on obviously I have a recruitment company, so we spend a lot of time on the likes of LinkedIn, and you see people referring to themselves as 17 times certified this, or 15 times certified that. And it is interesting that it is like the higher the number, the better I am. But I think, from what you're saying, it always makes sense to get a certification to almost rubber stamp what you've just done. If you've done a project on, let's just say Pardot, the first thing that's popped in my head, then they're maybe going to get the cert afterwards. But don't just get the cert when you've never actually done it. It doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense. I remember the Microsoft days as well, and in the end it got a bit flooded, didn't it? So in the old days, if you had a Microsoft cert, you could walk into a job and get loads of money. Yeah. Within a certain number of years, the market was so flooded with Microsoft certified people that it didn't mean anything. And I wonder whether that will happen to Salesforce one day.
I suspect it will. It's sort of like a certification inflation, really, because
inflation. That's a good one.
Yeah. So that it becomes meaningless, becomes worthless. I don't look at it like that at the moment, but I could see that happening because, again, even today, I probably get 3 to 4 recruitment agencies a week saying we've got this position. You know, are you interested in talking and whatever? Simply because they can look through a CV, and often the CV they've got is quite old, but they can see the kind of projects that I've run in the verticals that I've run them in, and the way I've worked things round, you know, the issues that you get in any project. So I mean, one of the questions you asked me earlier about, did I ever have any, did I have a funny story? I'm not sure it was funny, but one company that I went to, I had 14 interviews.
That's crazy.
Absolutely.
Is it in the Southforce world or is this previous?
This was Southforce, yeah, yeah. And not that long ago, so I won't mention the company, and it's not the one I'm working for at the moment. Yeah, it was, I was on the on video, I was on the phone, and whatever. And I had interviews with quite a large company, so, and I think I'd had interviews with just about everybody, including the tea lady.
Did you get an offer, really?
Yeah.
Not an offer of a cup of tea from the tea lady, but did you get to offer that company? You don't have to name them.
I did. In the end, they came to me, you know, and said, "Yeah, we want you to lead this project." I spent two years there, and it was the interview sequence was a good indication of what it was like working for the company.
Oh, so you joined? Sorry, I kind of assumed that you didn't take it. So you this?
Oh no. Oh, right. Okay. In the end, you know, I was working then as a contractor, and you know, they came back to me several times, and the last time they came back to me, I didn't have a contract, so. I wanted to join the company. I mean, from the moment the opportunity came up, because it was quite a good company. I'd heard a lot about it. But their interview processes were absolutely diabolical, absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and I assumed as well, when you said 14 interviews, I'm assuming that was for permanent, because that's still a ridiculous amount for a permanent person, but you could almost understand it. But for contractor, that's even more ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. Again, it was originally as a contractor, and you know, it was going to be a lengthy contract rather than you know, sort of the usual 3 month and then renewal. And in the end, they said to me, "Would you go permanent?" And I said, and then they made an offer which made it sensible to go permanent. So I said, yeah. And I was with them for 2 years permanently. I interviewed people while I was there, some of whom you know, and I certainly didn't go through 14 interviews with them.
No. And on that note then, so, I mean, you've worked, excuse me, for an end user in that case. In fact, your career, you've probably covered all of them, haven't you, in terms of the way I look at it. You've got an end user, you've got a consultancy, and you've got the sort of the app maker, builder, ISV type, which I'm thinking was probably Lagan. So what are the differences, in your opinion, in your experience of those three? And
as a project manager, obviously you sort of alternate between a gamekeeper and poacher, really. So you know, when you're with a company and Salesforce SIs are working for you and with you, then the whole way of working is different, because you have a different set of values, and so you've got to remember that. In a lot of cases, you have sympathy for an SI, because what they're being asked to do is not necessarily the what you as a XSI worker would agree with, but you've got to ask that question. You've got to make sure that you get the best for your company. Yeah. And that's one of the things is, you know, as they say, don't go native. It's very easy to go native when you see that what's actually happening is, in your opinion, the wrong way to treat an SI. And it's very easy to switch over and say, well, no, they're right. Maybe they are in some senses, but you have to understand that your company has a business need, and as a project manager, you're trying to put a business tool, be it Salesforce or any other piece of software, in to enhance the business and in the end save money and save and make more profit.
Make more money, yeah. And sorry to ask a stupid question, but what do you mean by don't go native?
Well, it's very easy. When you are talking to SIs, a lot of the people you're talking with, if you like, at a human level, are people that are in a position that you yourself have been in. And it's very easy to sympathize with them and say, don't worry about that. We'll sort that and whatever. And I'm afraid to say, on occasions, I've done it. So, it's one of those things. But you have to understand that your loyalty in the project has to be with the company you're working for. And sometimes you have to be a little bit harder and say, no, you know, I've heard your advice. I've heard what you say. I understand what you say. But this is the way we want it done. This is the way it has to be done.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah. And have you got preference now? And I know at the moment you're working on the SI side, and you've done that before, obviously, and you've done the end users quite a bit. So is there a preference for you, or you just like?
I like the SI side simply because the variety is there.
Yeah.
You can be working on Sales Cloud one day and, sort of 3 weeks later, you're working with Amazon Connect and Salesforce. And, 6 weeks later, you're working with, Service Cloud or Marketing Cloud or all the various clouds that I was going to say, and that takes me back to an earlier point, is you're never going to know everything, never. So you need to understand that at times you have to adapt yourself, but also work with your colleagues. I mean, obviously, as a project manager, I have technical people working with me and BAs working with me, and they know a hell of a lot more about the technical side than I do, and that's why they're on that project. My job as a project manager is to make sure that the whole thing comes together, that you provide the best possible service, you keep everybody updated, and you look out for any issues. One word really is communication. That really is the whole thing about project management, is communication. Communicate with the customer, communicate with the team, communicate with your company, and make sure that everybody's in the loop.
Yeah, no, and I suppose, as I said earlier on, with the amount of opportunities that are knocking around in the Salesforce space, it probably could be quite easy for people to get pulled from pillar to post and try and understand everything. But I think in the way Salesforce is going, people need to probably sort of pick a lane, and become an expert in that, and not beat themselves up for not knowing the ins and outs of everything and having all the certs for everything.
Yeah.
If that's a bit of advice. I was going to ask, actually, what is it like then? Because you mentioned that you get messages all the time on LinkedIn and what have you. When you're in a job and you're happy, is it really quite annoying to just be constantly pinged by people like myself with I've got this job, are you looking? Because I imagine it's constant in the Salesforce space.
Yeah, it is. If I go through my personal email today, I'm sure there'll be, in fact, I know there's two that's saying, would you like to talk about this? I wouldn't say annoying. I mean, in some ways, it's great.
You know, flattering, because,
yeah. And it's very flattering. It's also the fact that, you know, they may catch you in a period of time when you're not very happy where you are. And it's a way out. So, yeah, no, it's never a problem. And I always politely say, no, I'm, you know, permanent with you know, currently with EPAM. And say, no, I'm very happy there.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking to move.
So put like a full-time job, just managing your inbox on LinkedIn.
It can be, yeah.
And that's goes back to my point. You know, sometimes you look at, and this is for, you know, someone listening maybe that might be in this situation. Your CV can, if you're not careful, your CV can look like 9 months here, 8 months there, 10 months there, and you're jumping around. This is not even a contractor. This is a permanent person. Because the minute something isn't quite right where you are, you go to that inbox and you go, right, I'm out of here. Is that the best thing, though, for your career? Or
do you
try and figure it out and stick where you are for a little bit?
Yeah, to learn anything, you need to take the pain. You know, it's great when a project finishes and it's very successful. And, you know, everybody's your friend. Everybody's patting you on the back and the team, you know, whatever. But sometimes there's a lot of pain in that, and a lot of late nights and a lot of, I'll use the word stress. You do get stressed. It's I'm not a stressy type person, but, you know, even I sometimes get a bit stressed about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things I do look at on a CV is if the job is permanent and they are from a permanent background, then I look at how long they've been there. Because, you know, certainly at the moment, if things go wrong, it is easy to bail. It'd be very easy to think, I don't need this. I'll go to XYZ.
I get from where I'm coming from, recruitment companies, we're out there dangling these opportunities out there for people in the hope that they say they're looking. But there are some occasions where you look at someone's CV and go, you really need to stay where you are for another year or something, otherwise your CV is going to start to look like there's a common denominator in you moving every number of months, and that's the people assume that that's something with you, which sounds awful. But I think if your reaction is to glance across at opportunities every time there's a little issue at your current company, then you're never going to stay anywhere very long.
That's very true. You know, obviously from a contract point of view, sometimes you get a 3-month contract. And that's all there is to it. You know, you're not going to get an extension simply because you've done what you had to do.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm very careful to read up on that, to make sure that there is a contract, because you can't discriminate against somebody.
This leads quite nicely into a question that it's a hot topic at the moment. I mean, it's always been a reasonably hot topic in the Salesforce ecosystem, but I've never known in all the different recruitment sort of lives I've had, because I've known you from before we both went to Salesforce. This marketplace at the moment is absolutely rife with counter offers. So that's obviously only really for permanent people. But bearing in mind what we just said about how easy it is to sort of glance across and go, right, I'm out of here. I don't think there's many people at the moment that are saying, right, I'm out of here. I've done me 14 interviews at this company. I'm leaving, and then lo and behold, this magical new opportunity arrives at the company they were at with a nice pay rise. Where do you sit on the whole counter offer thing from the point of view of receiving one yourself, maybe, or even giving one if someone was saying to you, I'm off? Has that ever happened for you?
Yeah, it's happened in both ways. I mean,
really?
Obviously, you know your financial requirements. And you know what you need. My advice in that sense is never ever go chasing the big money unless you really, really need it, because you know, I can only think of my own experience, and I've only ever done that once, and it was the worst decision I ever made. Many years ago. I was on what I considered a fair wage, and somebody came in with a huge offer, you know, virtually tripling what I was on.
Wow.
And I thought, this is for me. But let me tell you, it wasn't. It was
the worst
period of my working life. You know, I hated it. I hated it. And I got out of that. I tried to stick it out, but I couldn't. That was a lesson.
What I tend to find sometimes, did you then, because you then get used to that level of salary. So when you're trying to get out, you can't, because...
Yeah, you become, I think you wouldn't call it a poverty trap, a reverse poverty trap.
Yeah.
You become used to having a lot of spare cash, a lot of, things that you hadn't been able to do. And especially, you know, as it was then, I had a young family, so it was nice to be able to spend money on really good holidays for them. And you tend to put up with quite a lot. But when you suddenly feel your own mental stability being affected, that's the time to get out.
No details necessarily or naming companies, but what was it then that made it the worst? You know, was it that they expected so much of you because they're paying you so much?
Yeah, they do. I mean, obviously they're not going to give you an easy ride, and I knew that when I joined. I mean, it was a company that I dealt with in the past as a customer. What I didn't realize is their internal ways of working were high pressure on everybody. I mean, the amount, the turnover of people in that company was absolutely incredible. And their ways of treating you and talking to you, it was virtually, we're paying you this much, we'll talk to you however the hell we like. And, you'll do what I tell you to do, working 7 days a week, sort of, in some cases, 15, 20 hours.
But that's the thing, isn't it? That's the trade-off. You're saying about it's nice to have the money to spend on a young family, but you're not there.
Yeah. You'd also end up the richest man in the graveyard. So,
you're coming out with some really good little quotes. Richest man in the graveyard.
Yeah.
I might write it down. I know as a recruiter, we keep going on about counter offers, and it's, and from our point of view, it's annoying because you say to people, are you sure you're going to leave and all that?
Mm.
But it is very rife at the minute. There's a lot of money being thrown around for people that were unhappy for whatever reason. And obviously you try and get to the root of that reason. And then they obviously go out to the ecosystem. They spend some time talking to other companies. Which is a waste of their time, effectively, isn't it? If they're then not really going to leave, they only to be lured to stay for, in some cases, quite a lot of money. It just seems, obviously, the Salesforce, what can the Salesforce ecosystem continue to do this, do you think?
I think under the present climate, this will continue for a period of time.
Mm.
But there will come a day of reckoning in the end. There always is from the financial angle. So, I in the reverse situation, I look at a person's worth, and if they come and say, look, sorry, Dave, but, I'm handing my notice in. I always like to talk to them about it and why. I always say, look, would you mind telling me what you've been offered? If they've been offered a salary that, in my view, is above their capabilities that run the company, then I won't even attempt to match it. The reason that you would often do it is you don't want the hassle of trying to employ somebody to fit in. You know that once that person leaves, if they're at all competent, they're going to leave a hole.
Yeah.
And yes, you can fill that. You can fill that maybe with somebody that is even more competent. But you've got to ramp that person up. They don't come in from day one, know everything about everything, the way you work, the way your clients work, and hit the ground. People sort of talk about hit the ground running. You know, in reality, that in that situation, it doesn't happen. You need to give them time to understand your systems, understand the way you work, understand your company values, things like that. So, yeah, it when somebody leaves and they're, you know, sort of reasonably good at their job, it does leave a hole. And sometimes you think, well, actually, we probably are underpaying them. So you make them a counter offer, better than the one they've had.
Yeah.
But I would say that's always the exception rather than the rule.
And, you know, do you then not look at them a bit strange every time they have a doctor's appointment or a or feel? Because you can't help it, can you? Are they really, or are they off again interviewing?
Yeah, you do. The relationship, the personal relationship, it is never really the same, because, as you say, you get a phone call and say, you know, I'm afraid my granddad's died, and you think, well, how many granddads have you had? You know, you know, the doctor's appointment, as you say, and things like that. It can't be the same again.
No, it's interesting because it is rife at the moment, and it's, you know, good luck to some people for getting what they're getting, but it'd just be nice if people got that before going out to the market and speaking to people and what have you. There you go. That's counter offers covered anyway. I already appreciate it's been an hour. So I didn't ask you at the beginning of this how long you've got. So I'll just say if you need to stop. I've got a couple more questions I want to run by you.
I could do another 10, 15 minutes here.
Okay, cool. Right. Well, maybe went in with that long, but what if you can think of it, what would you say has been the biggest challenge so far in your career? And I suppose we're talking about Salesforce now, but you know,
if you're talking about Salesforce, is understanding how you approach a project, knowing full well that, in fairness, Salesforce, the clue's in the name, they're a company that, you know, obviously have to sell a lot of licenses and things, and they will set customer expectations at a very high level, and you need to be very conscious of that and understand the reality of the situation and work with the customer to, I wouldn't say bring that down, but to align it more it's normally possible.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And do you have a sort of a favorite thing about the Salesforce ecosystem or the Salesforce product suite, or, you know, is there anything about it that you know is your?
Yeah, I think my favorite thing is there's always something new.
Yeah,
you know, if you get bored with Salesforce, then the problem's with you. You know, basically, because there is always something new, and it's a very, very good sector to work in. And the interest levels, and I do sometimes look at the technical side of things and think, yeah, let's see how this works. And then you sort of slap yourself, and I do as a PM, thinking, no, those days have gone, don't touch it. But they're a good company to work with, and I find that certainly over the last 2 to 3 years they really have become more customer focused than they were before. I think at times they sold things that were not really fit for purpose, or were, but you'd have to do so much customization on it that it would make it financially unviable. But now I think they actually look at their customers as partners. They've always claimed to, but I think they do now, and that's nice. And with the customer success programs that they have, it's very good. And you know, working with them, they do keep the SIs on the straight and narrow as well.
Okay, that's good, man. Yeah. Exactly. And what are you most excited about in terms of the future of your career, I suppose, and Salesforce, the ecosystem?
Yeah, I think the future is really big for Salesforce. You almost think, oh, God knows what they'll come up with doing next. But I can't wait. It's a bit like, you know, sort of in the old days, waiting for the evening paper. So, you know, what's in that now? And it's it's always a challenge. There's always something new, and it's interesting. And provided you can personally take that as a plus, because with that comes stress.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get landed with things that you have absolutely no idea about, and you think, well, you know, it's my job to work this with the team, but we've got to work through this and work it out. Providing you can take that, then it's a great sector to be in, and I'd recommend it to anyone.
Absolutely brilliant. And any final sort of thoughts or tips or anything like that, or are you happy with the hour and a bit we've done?
No, I think we've gone through a lot of things. I'll just say, you know, if Salesforce is your chosen path, then make sure that you know your product, but make sure you know your business sectors, and make sure that you come across as a person, as a human being, and someone who can fit in, not just some sort of genius machine who knows everything about Salesforce.
Certification collector,
yeah.
No, brilliant. Lovely. Thanks, Dave. It's been great catching up with you, because it's been a while since we've spoken. And I totally appreciate your time going through. And, you know, like you said before, there's topics in there that you could spend a whole hour talking about, those one topics. Maybe we'll follow up one day and do that. But
I'll tell you about my 14 interviews. Yeah,
why not? That'd be quite interesting. I still can't believe that. It sounds like, you know, if anyone does want to find you, obviously LinkedIn, but then your LinkedIn inbox sounds like a nightmare. But are you quite open to that if anyone wants to?
Oh, absolutely. If anybody wants to chat or wants to anything that I can help with, I've been around a long time, so probably have seen most things. Very little surprises me these days, so yeah, I'm more than happy
you're on LinkedIn with your Portsmouth shirt on, if I remember rightly.
Actually, I think LinkedIn, I got my West Indies shirt on.
Oh, I thought it was your Pompeii. That's my knowledge of outside of the Premier League sort of football. Yeah,
No, my Portsmouth shirt stays hidden. I get too much stick about that.
Fair enough. Oh dear. Well, Dave, thanks very much for spending an hour or so with us, mate. I really appreciate it. And look forward to what happens in your career moving forward. And thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Good day.